right now on the Daily Debrief.
Who killed Jennifer Fulford?
I did.
A shocking admission in the murder trial of this Florida man. You won't believe who he's trying to blame.
I think the world should know that. I mean, it's justice. The truth should be known, sir.
And the jury has the case of another Florida man already convicted of triple murder.
This was a well-thought-out plan.
Will it be death or life in prison? Plus, an update in the sentence for a Texas man who admitted to causing his daughter's death. The Daily Debrief recaps the day in court. It's Thursday, June 27th. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to The Debrief. Aaron Keller along with Norman Williams and Mike Korobanics. Explosive, shocking, maybe even crazy testimony in a Florida courtroom as a defendant facing possible execution gets on the stand and blames his probation officer for the murder he admits to committing. Defendant Scott Nelson is accused of killing Jennifer Fulford. The victim was a personal assistant and a nanny to a wealthy man. The defendant is accused of taking her from her home where she worked, duct taping her face and ankles, tying her hands behind her back, stabbing her in the back and in the heart. Let's begin with the defendant's direct testimony.
Can you tell me who Julio Dominguez is?
Julio Dominguez is employed by the U.S. Department of Justice, United States Probation Office in Orlando, Florida.
How is he related to this case?
Well, sir, he was my probation officer. I was on supervised release.
Okay, and what is the importance of his involvement in this case?
Well, sir, I'll be very frank with you. Jennifer Lynn Fulford would be alive today had it not been for Julio Dominguez.
And the reason for that statement, sir?
I think the world should know that. I mean, it's justice. The truth should be known, sir.
Have you ever been convicted of a felony?
Six of them, sir.
Okay, that set the stage for a cross-examination, which went downhill further and further from there.
You were under the supervision of this individual by the name of Julio Dominguez.
That's correct.
All right. So, Mr. Dominguez was a federal probation officer?
That's correct.
Okay. And Mr. Dominguez, according to your statement, is the individual responsible for Jennifer Fulford's death?
Yes.
Did Mr. Dominguez kill Jennifer Fulford?
No.
Who killed Jennifer Fulford?
I did.
All right. So you left unsaid why Mr. Dominguez is responsible for her death. Would you like to explain?
Yes.
Please do.
I was employed in Winter Park for a painting company by a alleged Christian family who took it in their interest because I was such a dedicated, hard worker, allowed me to live at their employment as well. Prior to that, I had been homeless after being released from federal custody, thrown to the street, homeless with no money. He made it a point to create a situation with my employer slash landlord, which is one of the same, and he got me thrown on the street after months of suffering on the streets of Orlando.
So what he did was notify your employer that you were on federal probation.
No, actually, Ms. Burdick, what he did was I satisfied the court's and the probation officer's criteria. I told them that I was in prison and I named the felony and they were happy with that, the family. That satisfied the court. He took it upon himself to, as he called it, a third party perspective. And he went to the owner and he used vulgar language and said, "What are you, blank, crazy for letting this man live here? And you're going to let him work here? Get him out of here." And that got me thrown on the street.
Can you believe this? The defendant said another acquaintance led him to target the victim's wealthy employer because he needed money. He said he never knew the victim or the employer before that.
You don't know Reed Berman, right?
Never met the man.
And you don't know or didn't know Jennifer Fulford?
No, I don't.
There was nothing that either one of them ever did to you that would have resulted in you taking some sort of revenge on them for, you know, some moral cause.
I believe the term is collateral damage.
All right. You're saying that Jennifer Fulford was collateral damage as a result of your disliking Mr. Dominguez and how he treated you.
Well, I believe it's yes, but it's more accurate that he had a problem with me rather than I having a problem with him.
And did you direct your concerns to Mr. Dominguez or his supervisor?
Well, once I got thrown on the street with no job and stuff, there was really no sense in complaining to anyone. What are they going to do?
So that's a no?
That would be a no.
Okay, collateral damage. An innocent woman's life is collateral damage. That's what he said. The prosecutor pushed back on that one, and the defendant pushed back even harder.
Instead of taking a normal route to deal with somebody that you disagree with on a professional level, you took another route to make your point.
May I suggest yes and no answers in an area that we're venturing is really like putting a gag in my mouth, because there's a lot more to just a yes and a no. But I'll go with the game here. Yes.
All right. So you think this is all game?
Well, I think what you're doing is trying to manipulate the real facts.
No, I'm trying to make a point. The point is, you had a problem with somebody completely unrelated to Jennifer Fulford and Reed Berman, and you made a plan in September of 2017 to take your anger toward that person out on somebody like Jennifer Fulford.
I think that's accurate.
All right. Why not Mr. Dominguez?
Huh. Funny you should mention that. I happen to possess a 9mm handgun with two boxes of ammunition. They were in the house.
I'll rule the objection.
You can finish.
I happen to have that gun. I was going to shoot him. And I believe in God, because God was looking out for Mr. Dominguez that Saturday afternoon. Because me and him were in a part of Winter Park on Forsyth Street where on Saturday afternoon, there was no one.
So you wanted to kill Mr. Dominguez, and you had the ability and the tools to do so, and you made a choice at that time not to.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's very lucky.
Wow. He's very lucky. The probation officer. This defendant next described the home invasion which led to the victim's death.
So the goal of the home invasion was to get as much money as possible.
That'd be correct.
And you chose, of course, the wealthy section of Winter Park because it stands to reason that those are the individuals that might have maybe a substantial amount of cash in their home.
As I was told, yes.
Now, one of the things you told the detectives was that you saw Jennifer Fulford at this residence the night before. True?
True.
With the young boy?
True.
And the night before, you decided she was going to be your target. She was going to be the means by which you get yourself into Reed Berman's house.
That'd be correct. A lot of what I told the detectives was untrue, because we started off with a quid pro quo, and they started weaseling out and playing their games, and it started giving me a little enjoyment watching them squirm. Because some of the answers I gave them, the blood pizza, come on. That's a lot of inaccurate information I gave them, because they weren't being forthcoming with my needs. They weren't trying to help me. They just wanted to squeeze me, so I just gave them a lot of BS back.
It's all about his needs, apparently, not the woman who he admitted to killing. Earlier in this case, a crime scene technician took to the stand to describe the area where authorities recovered the victim's body and the discovery of the knife authorities say was used to kill the victim.
Did the Winter Park Police Department have success in locating any items of potential evidentiary value on that date?
We did. We found a knife. This is the field. What you're looking at here is a post where we marked where Ms. Fulford was recovered. It is. It's the same field. What you're looking at here is the marker marked with red tape where the knife is found.
Did you take photographs of two together to show their relative position to one another?
I did.
Is that what you are depicting in 137?
I am. You're looking at where Ms. Fulford was recovered and where the knife was found.
Okay, we are going to talk now quickly to wrap up the Nelson case. The DNA lab matched the defendant's DNA to samples found on a t-shirt, a blood-stained towel, and a watch recovered from the victim's car. So bottom line, there is corroborating evidence to what that defendant said on the stand that we just heard. Meantime, we're going to move now to another case. This is the Christopher Vasada case in Florida, where a jury has just reached a verdict in the penalty phase of the case of a man convicted of murdering three people at a party. That jury has just decided whether it will be life in prison or the death penalty for that defendant, Christopher Vasada. Testimony revealed that the party involved drugs and possibly drug dealing, and that the defendant and an accomplice ditched their cars a mile away and walked to the scene in an apparent attempt to evade detection. You saw the three victims of that shooting on your screen just a second ago. The jury entering the courtroom live in Florida as we speak. Let's listen in as the judge is being handed, presumably, the verdict sheet.
Looking at the verdict, I'll pass it over to the clerk, who will then pronounce it. He will then poll you again, if you remember, ask each and every one of you with specific instructions. And after that, I'm going to be excusing you right to the back. I'll conclude your jury service. But I want to tell you how much I appreciate your hard work. Some of you have been here since May 31st. This has been a very difficult process, and I admire you and appreciate everything that you've done for us. As you exit, Deputy Dunkley is going to give you a packet. And inside the packet is a letter evidencing your jury work for your employer. If any of you have a problem with your employer, please don't hesitate to call my office and I'll do whatever I can for you. I've had one problem in 16 years. There's a certificate of appreciation as well. Also, we have your cell phones. Make sure when you go through there that you have your personal belongings from the jury room. But I didn't want to discharge you without just, I can't say it enough, how much I appreciate. You are a very diligent group. Now I have one last instruction for you. So I'm going to read this instruction, then I'm going to look at the verdict form because I want to get you right out. So ladies and gentlemen, I wish to thank you for your time and consideration of this case. I also wish to advise you some very special privileges enjoyed by jurors. No juror can ever be required to talk about the discussions that occurred in the jury room except by court order. For many centuries, our societies relied upon juries for considerations of difficult cases. We've recognized for hundreds of years that a jury's deliberations, discussions, and votes remain their private affair as long as they wish it. Therefore, the law gives you a unique privilege not to speak about your work. Although you are at liberty to speak with anyone about your deliberations, you are also at liberty to refuse to speak to anyone. A request may come from those who are simply curious or from those who might seek to find fault with you. It will be up to you to decide whether to preserve your privacy as a juror.
Circuit Court of the 15th Judicial Circuit in and for Palm Beach County, Florida, criminal division. Case number 17CF002808 AMB Division X, State of Florida, versus Christopher Rosada, defendant. Verdict. We, the jury, find as follows. As to Christopher Rosada in this case, A, aggravating factors as to count one, Sean Henry. We, the jury, unanimously find that the state has established beyond a reasonable doubt the existence of the aggravating factor. The first-degree murder was committed in cold, calculated, and premeditated manner without any pretense of moral or legal justification. Yes. We, the jury, unanimously find that the state has established beyond a reasonable doubt the existence of the aggravating factor. Christopher Posada was previously convicted of another capital felony or a felony involving the use of violence to another person. Yes. Aggravating factors as to count two, Brandy L. Sadi. We, the jury, unanimously find that the state has established beyond a reasonable doubt the existence of the aggravating factor. The first-degree murder was committed in cold, calculated, and a premeditated manner without any pretense or moral or legal justification. No. We, the jury, unanimously find that the state has established beyond a reasonable doubt the existence of the aggravating factor. Christopher Posada was previously convicted of another capital felony or a felony involving the use of violence to another person. Yes. Aggravating factors as to count three, Kelly Dory. We, the jury, unanimously find that the state has established beyond a reasonable doubt the existence of the aggravating factor. The first-degree murder was committed in a cold, calculated, and premeditated manner without any pretense of moral or legal justification. No. We, the jury, unanimously find that the state has established beyond a reasonable doubt the existence of the aggravating factor. Christopher Posada was previously convicted of another capital felony or a felony involving the use of violence to another person. Yes. Sufficiency of the aggravating factors as to count one, Sean Henry. Reviewing the aggravating factors that we unanimously found to be established beyond a reasonable doubt, Section A, we, the jury, unanimously find the aggravating factors are sufficient to warrant a possible sentence of death. Yes. The sufficiency of the aggravating factors as to count two, Brandy L. Sadi. Reviewing the aggravating factors that we unanimously found to be established beyond a reasonable doubt, Section 8, we, the jury, unanimously find that the aggravating factors are sufficient to warrant a possible sentence of death. Yes. Sufficiency of the aggravating factors as to count one, Kelly Dory. Reviewing the aggravating factors that we unanimously found to be established beyond a reasonable doubt, Section 8, we, the jury, unanimously find the aggravating factors are sufficient to warrant a possible sentence of death. Yes. Mitigating circumstances. One or more individual jurors find that one or more mitigating circumstances was established by the greater weight of the evidence. Yes. Eligibility for the death penalty as for count one, Sean Henry. We, the jury, unanimously find that the aggravating factors that were proven beyond a reasonable doubt, Section 8, outweigh the mitigating circumstances established. Section C above as to count one, yes. Eligibility for the death penalty for count two, Brandy Al Saeed. We, the jury, unanimously find that the aggravating factors that were proven beyond a reasonable doubt, Section 8, outweigh the mitigating circumstances established. Section C above as to count two, yes. Eligibility for the death penalty as to count three, Kelly Dory. We, the jury, unanimously find that the aggravating factors that were proven beyond reasonable doubt, Section A, outweigh the mitigating circumstances established. Section C above as to count three, yes. Jury verdict as to death penalty for count one, Sean Henry. Having unanimously found that at least one aggravating factor has been established beyond a reasonable doubt, Section A, that the aggravating factors are sufficient to warrant a sentence of death, Section B, and the aggravating factors outweigh the mitigating circumstances, Section D, we, the jury, unanimously find that Christopher Posada should be sentenced to death. No. Jury verdict as to the death penalty for count two, Randy Al-Saki. having unanimously found that at least one aggravating factor has been established beyond a reasonable doubt, Section A, that the aggravating factors are sufficient to warrant a sentence of death, Section B, and the aggravating factors outweigh the mitigating circumstances, Section D, we, the jury, unanimously find that Christopher Posada should be sentenced to death. No. Jury verdict as to death penalty for count three, Kelly Dory. Having unanimously found that at least one aggravating factor has been established beyond a reasonable doubt, Section A, that the aggravating factors are sufficient to warrant a sentence of death, Section B, and the aggravating factors outweigh the mitigating circumstances, Section B, we the jury unanimously find that Christopher Posada should be sentenced to death. No. Dated this 27th day of June, 2019, in Palm Beach County, Florida. Signed, jury foreperson. Do you, juror number one, agree that at least one member of the jury voted for a sentence of life imprisonment without the possibility of parole?
Yes, sir.
Juror number two, do you agree that at least one member of the jury voted for a sentence of life imprisonment without the possibility of parole?
Yes.
Juror number three, do you agree that at least one member of the jury voted for a sentence of life imprisonment?
And you just saw the breaking news right here on the Law and Crime Network. Jurors deciding to spare the life of Christopher Posada after convicting him of triple murder. Three people killed at a party. Victim Sean Henry. They found aggravating factors. They found that the aggravating factors were outweighing other factors, but they turned around and said death penalty? No. They said the same thing for victim Brandy El-Salhi. Same thing for victim Kelly Doherty. No, no, no on the death penalty. The jury being polled right as we speak in that Florida courtroom, saying the appropriate sentence in this case is life without parole. The defense team shedding tears, wiping tears from their cheeks upon learning that the client's life will be spared, even though he will spend his life behind bars. Mike Korobanix, Norman Williams here with me. Mike, you were saying to me earlier today that you didn't think this should be a death penalty type of case. Jurors must have been reading your mind.
I'm not a proponent for death penalty, but we have to live with what the laws are. And I just didn't think the death penalty should be used very sparingly. That's more for a person who comes. Everybody here had a little, nobody deserves to die, don't get me wrong. Right. But everybody here had a little bit of dirt on them, for lack of a better term. Everybody was involved in some sort of illegal activities, things of that nature. This was in a situation, whereas the other case we watched earlier with Nelson, where some innocent person was visited upon and had this disaster. So I think this was a good verdict.
You know, that's a tough judgment to make, though, Mike, because people who are at a party who might have been using drugs, there was some evidence to that, at least to some of the victims. Do they necessarily deserve to be mowed down by a couple of guys who show up with guns, though? I mean, you know, are they not innocent victims?
They are to a point. They are to a point. He's going to serve life. But I don't know if it's those kind of circumstances that the death penalty needs to protect and it's the deterrent for. It's, you know, they say if you want to judge a person, see who they're surrounded by at their death, an old lawyer once told me, and that sort of fits in here.
Norman Williams, your thoughts?
No, I think Mike was right. I think that under these circumstances, this is not a proper death penalty case. But I also think that the jurors had a bit of benevolence in their heart. And I think they really thought long and hard and said to themselves, well, we can't do what he did. We can't put this man to death.
You know, earlier we were also here listening to some of the closing arguments made by the defense in this case. We didn't get a chance to play them for you here on the debrief because the verdict came in right when we were planning to bring them to you. They are online if you'd like to watch them. Norman, you said, though, that that was one of the most eloquent death penalty arguments from a defense team asking to spare a life that you had ever heard.
Yes, because a lot of times a good defense attorney, in their closing, they address the jurors as if they were a college professor. And the attorney that was making the arguments, you know, it was pleasing to see her be able to say to the jury, you might not like what he did, it might be disgusting to you, but to kill him doesn't make any sense, just like what he did makes no sense.
She said it with an eloquence that allowed her to level with the jury, and I felt like she was speaking just to me privately over coffee.
Yes.
And some people can have that demeanor in court. Norman Williams, Mike Korobanek, thanks a lot for your insight. That's enough for us. That's it for us here on The Debrief. Thank you for joining us for this incredible day of testimony and verdicts.